So this is talking with Dr. Is it John? Is
yes, your
Dr. John Clegg on 29 May 19th.
A is the middle initial.
Right. Did it say the 28th or the 29th? 28th of May. 28th of May 1981 over the telephone from Cambridge to your home, which is located where?
Home is in Rumsing.
In Rumsing.
Near Worthing.
Near Worthing, right. Now, if we could start off, if you could tell me what your training was, even before you went to Jodhpur Bank.
For what purpose is this exactly?
Well, it's for a book that I'm just beginning to write. Yeah. And the book is covering the history of radio and... if you could tell me what your training was...
By the way, just before we do begin...
Yes? Start off by asking... Well, what was your educational background and your training, and when did you first come into contact with radio astronomy?
I see. Well, I took a degree in physics at Manchester University in 1935.
I see.
And I did some teaching to begin with. I took a diploma in education after my degree, and then I taught for a few years, and then I got into the war.
Mm-hmm.
And
doing what kind of work?
Well, I was doing radar. I was at TRE.
Oh, yes.
I've heard of.
Right.
I was pulled into TRE, and I was doing research work on radar, mostly on propagation of radio waves, first of all, in the early radars of about 30 meters, and then down 1.5 meters, and then on centimeters.
Did you say 13 meters in the beginning?
13 meters.
Right.
That was a wavelength of the early warning stations that we used during the Battle of Britain.
You know? I see.
And I was concerned quite a lot with problems of construction of aerials, transmission lines.
Right.
And propagation of radio waves, deflection at cliff edges, deflection at coastline.
Right.
You know, we used a technique of reflecting the radio waves at really virtually large-scale Lloyd's mirror fringe.
Exactly, right.
To get the elevation. And I was concerned with the technicalities of a lot of that.
Then, of course, this technique was used after the war for radio astronomy observations by the the Australians.
I used it with Davidson to measure the heights of meteors later on.
You did? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's a paper. I've got a copy. I've searched out some old papers since you rang the other night, and I think I've got a copy of it here somewhere. It was Clegg and Davidson.
Which year was that?
Oh, wait a minute. I'll be turning through them as we go on talking.
Okay. I do have a bibliography of radar astronomy, but it doesn't have a nice index in it, unfortunately, and I haven't had a chance to go through and ferret out all of your papers.
So you must have all of my papers with them. I've forgotten the year now. But
in any case, I can check that.
Yes, good.
Was that towards the end of your...
towards the end of my time at Jodhpur Bank.
I didn't realize that technique had been used in media radar work also.
Yes, it had. It's rather nice, actually. Oh, are we talking?
Yes.
Are we out of context?
No. Just keep on talking.
All right. Well, you know the theory, in fact, Lovell and I have it in one of our papers, of the theory we developed for a reflection of radio waves from meteors.
Yes.
You get specular reflection and you can draw out Fresnel zones on the
exactly, area. Right.
And Davis used this for measuring velocities of meteors. Well, it so happens that... when you try to measure the elevation of a meteor trail by comparing the echoes between two aerials at different heights and using
yes.
Lloyd's mirror fringes,
right.
To a first order, the fact that the trail isn't being uniformly illuminated, you see,
by the primary beam,
the thing,
right.
And there are different parts of your polar diagram, different parts of the trail. To the first order, this cancels out, actually. You can still use it in practice for measuring the height of the reflecting point of the trail, even though you're getting waves returned from different parts of the trail. Do you see what I mean?
I see. Yes, yes.
Now, somewhere, I can't see this thing at the moment.
Well, that's okay. I do have a pretty complete bibliography, so I can find that.
Reagan Davidson, this is it. Phil Mag.
In which year?
1950.
1950, okay.
Yes, and it's volume 12, no, volume 16.
Oh, yes, I do.
77.
I do find it here, right.
Radio echo method for measurement of heights of reflecting points. Oh, well, you get it all there anyway. And we used it.
Well, that's interesting.
We built some special aerials for it, and we put down quite a wide area of chicken mesh in front of them. Had the ground specially leveled.
Right. And where did you go for this?
In Jodrell Bank. We just took up a corner of a field in Jodrell Bank with a lot of empty space in front of it.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to actually go to the sea then?
No, we didn't go to the sea. The sea has its disadvantages for that technique because tides rise and fall.
Right. And the waves, of course.
Yes, and waves. And we used 4 meters at Jodrell Bank, of course, for looking at radio meters.
Okay, well, let's go back to the wartime work, if I could.
Yes.
Let me just ask. Did you ever hear about the discovery by J.S. Hay of the solar radiation during the war?
Yes, we were quite pals. We were in very close contact with Hay, yes.
Now, you say you were quite pals. Now, do you remember when he was doing this actual investigation of trying to figure out what this interference was?
Yes, I do.
Okay, can you just tell me anything you remember about it?
See, as far as I remember, he had some apparatus going in Richmond Park.
That's correct, right.
Yeah. And there's nothing I can tell you very much more than is in the published papers about it.
Right. But now you're thinking of the period right at the end of the war and the immediate post-war period. I was wondering if you remembered in 1942.
No, I didn't. I didn't know him in those days.
I see.
It was the very end of the war that I got here. I found Hay was getting some of the same things that we were getting, particularly in the meteor line, in the shooting star line. And it was at the end of the war. I knew him towards the end, and then I knew him very well about the time I went to Jodrell Bank.
I see. But now you say...
Bank.
You say Hay was getting some of the same things that you were getting. Were you getting signs of things that might be meteors even during the war?
Well, yes, a lot of people were. A lot of funny things happened all the time on these long wavelengths.
Yeah, well, please tell me about that.
Mm. Well, we in the Air Force... I say we in the Air Force, I mean the Air Force early warning system.
Yes.
There was a chain of stations around the coast from Venter in the Isle of Wight, right along via Dover and up the east coast of England and Scotland, and finishing off in Orkney.
Mm-hmm.
And they all worked on about 30 meters, that sort of wavelength.
Right.
And we got very funny things with them. There was, for instance, a Ventnor ghost, which was never resolved as far as I know. It was an echo that appeared nowhere. They couldn't get a height on it. It was seen at Ventnor occasionally, usually at night, and appeared to be out in the middle of the channel.
Hmm.
And I believe they even sent a destroyer out. But nobody could find out what it was. It was presumably some batch of ionization or something.
Hmm. This only happened on one particular time, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
It happened several times. But there were other occasions when this sort of thing happened. The Ventnor one, it just happened to be one. It's probably not very important, but it was just one that I remember. And then there were, of course, the cases when we got spurious echoes at a slightly shorter wavelength on our CHL stations of 1.5 meters.
Yes.
Coming in across the North Sea and disappearing on the coastline of East Anglia, and this turned out to be geese.
Oh, I see.
Large flocks of migrating geese.
Uh-huh.
Happened to be just a resonant length of 1.5 meters.
Right, right.
amongst all these things was something that on the 30 meters we'd seen very often, and that was a stationary echo, sometimes just a little flick that lasted for a fraction of a second. You saw it blip down and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it would last for several seconds, getting on for a minute and even more, and sometimes be quite big. Now, we always suspected that these things must be produced by shooting stars going into the Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And we...
On what basis did you suspect that? On what basis did you suspect meteors?
They were stationary, and we assumed it was from the ionization of the trail.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody was too busy with the war to worry very much about them.
To follow it up?
To follow it up.
Operationally, they were not too much of a bother, you mean?
They only occurred occasionally.
Yeah.
But in the long, quiet watches, I remember, when there didn't have to be any raids coming in, and the WAFs there in the stations were looking into the tube hour after hour and gossiping to one another over the telephones.
Right.
Occasionally, they'd say, that's another there.
Mm-hmm.
And can you see it? And usually nobody else except the one station could see it.
I see.
And nobody got people tried to get heights on them, and nobody got anything very successful with the thing. I think usually when they were long enough to get a height on, they were probably very big trails, and they give us peerless answer anyway because they cover such a range of heights.
Yes, yes. Were you familiar with the work done in the early 30s by Schaefer and Goodall and Skelet?
In those days, no.
Not at that time?
No, we were all concentrated on the war effort.
Right.
And I don't think most of us had read those papers. We read them certainly afterwards, of course.
Right. Well, maybe I should just ask you at this point, is what was your feeling, or what is your feeling now, as to how much credit they should be given for recognizing these things as truly being due to meteors and so forth?
Well, I think we were the first people to really discover it. It was only said meteors were decided. Somebody said, oh, some cloud of ionized gas, you know. I think it was just general gossip, not talked about very much, you know, it cropped up occasionally.
Yeah.
But nobody, I don't think anybody...
Well, there is one paper by Skelet in which he actually did have visual observers correlating.
That's right, so he did.
But this was never followed up in any way.
No, it was in the 30s, wasn't it?
Right, about 34 or 35 or so.
Well, he obviously was the first person to... He obviously was ought to get credit for discovering it.
Well,
I think it was pretty well rediscovered again.